Before we dive into today's conversation, I'd like to say a brief word about the nature of our long-form interviews here at Insight Myanmar podcast. Simply put, all our discussions are guest-driven. Our discussions go deep into the expertise and perspectives of our guests because it is our belief that when we are able to open up to the experience and voice of others, well, we all learn. So with that, let's sit back and enjoy what follows.
Back. My guest today, Wei Amphyo Nai, is an expert on Myanmar-Chinese relations, and particularly in this very convoluted and very murky time, it's more important than ever to try to understand what the motivations are on both the Chinese side and the Myanmar side, especially as we see apparently increased rapprochement during the heightened tensions and the heightened crimes that we are seeing in 2025. So before we get into the details of that, thank you very much for joining our podcast. And I want to give you the chance to introduce yourself and your background for our audience.
Thank you very much for inviting me and giving me a chance to share my insight in this Insight Myanmar podcast. And my name is Wei Amphyo Nai. I did my PhD in Moscow, Russian Federation, in National Research University Higher School of Economics. My thesis is focused on the Myanmar-China relation, and the title of my thesis is The Evolution of Myanmar Policy Toward China, 1992-2021, in the beginning of the military regime. Currently, I'm working as a program and field technical support in local NGO in Thailand, Bangkok. And at the same time, I'm also working as a freelance researcher. I'm writing some articles on Myanmar issue, Myanmar-China relations, and Myanmar migrant in Thailand, and other related issues. And currently, last May, I just published one commentary in the Diplomat magazine about China's strategy on Myanmar rare earth mining and something like that.
Let's look at the historical overview of it. The relationship between China and Myanmar is complicated. I know this is slightly before the area that you focused on in your studies, but I think many of our listeners will be familiar, obviously, with the period in around the 60s of anti-Chinese protests and what we've often heard described as pogroms, Chinese people being assaulted and hunted down within Myanmar, and of course the attacks on the Chinese embassy. This period is obviously very fraught, and yet if we look at more modern history between China and Myanmar, there seems to be a lot of relationship, even between the Myanmar military and the Chinese government, despite the fact that this is the same military that was responsible for the anti-Chinese movement a few decades ago. Can you sort of explain to us, how does China, before the coup, before all of this, how did China view Myanmar and how did China view the military government of Myanmar, as a friend, as an enemy, or as just an opportunity to do business?
If I have to say, like I could say, they are using each other for their own benefit. That's what I would like to say for your questions. And because Myanmar also needs China, China also needs Myanmar at the time. Because at the time, military government, they got many sanctions and many criticism from the Western world and in the international stage. So they cannot develop their relations in every way, including like trade, economy, and something like that with the other powers from the Western part. So that they didn't have a choice. So they approached to China. At the same time, we shouldn't forget one Chinese privilege in UN. This is the China hold the veto power in the UN Security Council. So this is one of the main political reason for the military government and for the Myanmar leader until now, they've been trying to communicate with China in a peaceful way, and they always ask the Chinese favor in domestic policy and international policy because of that political privilege, that Beijing have in UN Security Council. So this is from the Myanmar side. For the Beijing side, for the China side, according to the geopolitics, China always wanted to avoid the Malacca Strait, in their logistic transportation and something like that. Because as far as they began developed, they wanted to expand their business and trade with the all over the world, country from the western part of the world, and also the Middle East, and also from the Africa. So for this reason, they need to find a new way to get access to the sea. So especially for the United States and for China is kind of northwestern part of the China, they don't have access to the sea. So according to get the access to the sea, they need to collaborate with the Myanmar, because Myanmar owns the strategic position in the Southeast Asia. You know? So that's why when Xi Jinping implemented the One Belt One Road initiative, Myanmar became before Xi Jinping implemented the One Belt One Road initiative, China already tried to negotiate with Myanmar military government. I mean, at the time, SPDC, State Peace and Development Council, to get an access to the Beawari River, because they wanted to create the tunnel from the border area to the Beawari River, and then Beawari to the sea. I mean, for more visible, you can see the current Cambodia, which is building the Bit Canal from the Mekong River to the sea. This is also the Chinese project. So I mean, Chinese wanted to implement this kind of project with Myanmar first, but at that time, the leader of the SPDC, they rejected it because of they don't want to see the Chinese flat ship crossing the Beawari River, you know, because the Beawari River is kind of mother river for Myanmar, and it's very crucial for the Myanmar people livelihood. So now they are trying to implement another project. Like this, the project is already finished, and is already running the business. It's kind of the Zhaopiu Deep Sea Port project. You know, for the Zhaopiu Deep Sea Port project, they already built up the gas, oil and gas pipeline from Zhaopiu to the Yunnan, and at the same time, they are already ready to continue their high speed railroad from Yunnan to the Zhaopiu. But because of the Myanmar current situation, and because of the unclear negotiation process, they cannot continue this project from border area to the Zhaopiu. So yeah, I explain like this because what I wanted to see you like, both of them are using for their benefit, you know, for their own interests. Myanmar using the China because of the political interests, and also especially in the current time, this is mostly for the political interests. But for the SPDC time, it's not only for the political interest, but also for the investment and economic interest too. At the same time, for the China, they also have a political interest, like they wanted to balance the control in the Southeast Asia, in the Asia Pacific region. At the same time, they also want to expand their trade route by using the Myanmar territory to get the seeds, to get the assets to the Bay of Bengal, you know, something like that. Yeah, what I could say is like they are using each other, you know.
So I want to get into different elements, different dimensions of China's interests within Myanmar. But before I look at the other ones, I want to sort of linger a little bit on what you just said. So with regard to Malacca, so to provide a little bit of context to those in our audience who are not aware of this situation, the Strait of Malacca is a waterway between Malaysia and Indonesia.
Yes.
And it is one of the most heavily used waterways in the world. And it is China's predominant shipping lane to Africa, to the Middle East, to Europe, and to many other parts of the world. And there is a fear that a Western-led coalition in the event of conflict could cut off access to the Strait of Malacca. So to clarify, you are saying that not only the Belt and Road Initiative, or what in Chinese is referred to as the One Belt, One Road Initiative, which Myanmar was definitely cooperating with even under the NLD government, but also before that, an initiative to utilize the Ayawadi River designed to give the Chinese access through Myanmar to the Bay of Bengal, which is on the west of the Strait of Malacca, allowing them to bypass this this entire sort of bottleneck. Is that China's sort of strategy in the One Belt, One Road Initiative in Myanmar?
No, it's before the Belt and Road Initiative.
Okay, so even before then, but this was their objective.
Yeah. It was objected by the Myanmar military government at the time.
Okay. And so conventionally, like we think of Yangon because it's an enormous port, but you were mentioning specifically the port in Zhaopiu in Rakhine State. And you're saying that it is already connected to Yunnan State in China for, did you say gas export?
Yeah, oil and gas pipeline. Wine and gas pipeline from Zhaopiu to the Yunnan.
So this means that Chinese oil and gas is already being sold towards the West, towards Western Asia and towards, you know, Africa and the Middle East and towards Europe, already without having to go through the Malacca Strait, without having to leave a Chinese port and sail all the way around Southeast Asia. It goes directly down to Myanmar, to Zhaopiu, and then it's put on ships and shipped from there westward. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
What I would like to remind you is I don't think it's kind. It is the 100% of the export import of the wine and gas from to China, maybe especially for the Yunnan province and other landlocked province of the China, you know.
Okay. Yeah. So it's one option out of many that China has.
Yes.
Okay.
What I would like to mention, at least they can reduce their dependent on the Malacca Strait, you know?
Yes. So that's very interesting. And you were saying, in addition to the fact that the oil and the gas pipelines have been constructed that run from Yunnan State down to Jiapu, there is also, you are saying, they're going to construct a freight line so they can start sending trains full of more conventional shipping freight to also be sent out of the port. That's correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And I assume that this project is incomplete and is suspended because of the ongoing conflict in the country.
It's not only because of the ongoing conflict, it's also because of the Myanmar government, Myanmar leaders' way of thinking. You know, that project is starting since the last phase of SPDC, I mean the military government before the 2011, and also after the 2011, that project is also negotiated again. But at the time, we have many contradictions inside the country, like because of the Mekong Dam project, you know, and if China bid that kind of railway project from Yunnan to the Jiapu, some activists, they complain that China is trying to divide the country in two parts. You know what I mean? If you can imagine in your eye, from Yunnan to Jiapu, if the railway is connected, it's seeing like that railway is dividing the country in the two parts.
Yes.
You know, like this. So they don't want, so many activists also complain about this issue after the Mekong Dam project, so that that project never initiated in the Myanmar until now. But for the China side, they already finished the railway project until near the borderline, you know. So if Myanmar gave the green light, they are ready to start.
Let's talk resources. So I know that China is interested in resources within Myanmar of nickel, of copper, also of rare earth metals in the north, dysprosium and terbium, and also things like jade that China is quite interested in. Myanmar does seem to have a lot of natural resources that China is very interested in acquiring. And I understand that after the coup, a lot of these resources are not flowing to China because these resources are being extracted from areas that are being hit by conflict, or the people who would be working in these mines, who would be working in these sectors, have had to flee their homes, go to the jungle, or they're joining the resistance movement. And this means China is not receiving their resources. How important, from the Chinese perspective, how important is access to Myanmar's resources? And more to the point, this is something I'm going to be coming back to later on, is China trying to build relationships with ethnic organizations in resource-rich areas to try to cut out the Myanmar military and simply work with local ethnic organizations and pay them to continue extracting and sending these resources?
Before I'm talking this, I would like to mention one mistake of Chinese policy on Myanmar.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they forgot. I mean, I don't want to say they didn't pay attention. Maybe they forgot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They forgot one thing, that they need to build up the people-to-people relationship. They forgot to recognize ways and needs of Myanmar people, and especially for the local people from the project area. You know, they didn't pay attention to it, and they think that. Maybe they thought that the military can control fully, and the military may support for their projects and for their negotiation, you know. But when Myanmar started the domestic rafale, political rafale in 2021, they got many, almost all of the Chinese investment and Chinese big infrastructure project got the serious criticism and complaint from the local peoples. Not only the Lebanon project, also Missile Dam project, and people also criticize about the Chinese influence in Myanmar politics, Myanmar domestic politics, and Chinese influence in not only the military, but also the ethnic militant group in the border area and other part of area, you know. So what I want to say is like, yes, China used another, after that, China trying to use the parallel diplomacy. It's like they are trying to connect with the military government and Myanmar leader, whoever in the position in the office, and they're trying to communicate with that, those kinds of people. And then on the other hand, they're trying to communicate and trying to build up the trust and friendship with the local people, especially in this stage, China stay trying to negotiate with the local militants, you know, ethnic militants. So maybe they may think that like if they can build up the trust and friendship with the local militant, they will be okay with the local people, you know. Maybe they are thinking like that. So that they're trying to build up this kind of thing. But stay, you know, they got many criticism for that, for their construction and for their project in the border area. And like the rare earths, if I have to take the one thing, like rare earth mining project and jade mining project in the northern part of Myanmar, both of these minerals are very essential for the Chinese government. Uh-huh. You know, for the rare earth mineral, this is for not only for the political interest, but also for the to control the logistic of the semiconductor production in the world. You know, uh-huh. And second, J is the kind of traditional and very traditional and very prosperous material, stone for the Chinese people. You know, they are very crazy on the jade, and also, I mean, but now you can see the Pakan area in northern part of Myanmar. You know, we already have many natural disaster because of the many deep hole after digging the jade, and now China reopened the border gate and border trade with the KIA, Kachin Independent Army, because they cannot let down the logistic of the rare earth mining project, you know, rare earth mining. So, but at the same time, nowadays, China also think that they still need to communicate with the Myanmar military, the current military regime, because maybe they think that, I can assume like they would think like talking with the military is kind of maybe more easy for them, you know. Why talking with the many militant group in the border area, you know. Like they don't need to negotiate with the different groups and different places. If military can control, if military fully control the country, you know, so they are playing like with the many hands, you know, at the same time. Like, they are also talking with the Myanmar military, and they are also trying to control and trying to talk with the other ethnic militant group in the border area to get a smooth continuity of their logistic and their project in the border area and the mining area, mining sector, like this.
Fair enough. And sort of on the reverse of this, because I just want to go through and sort of lay the foundation of China's various types of interests in Myanmar. On the reverse side of this, not just what they're trying to extract from Myanmar, but what they're afraid is being extracted from China. Obviously, over the last few years, we've heard a lot of these pig butchering scams. I know that we've interviewed USIP about this previously, and the estimate that we received was something in the order of about $3 billion a year, billion with a B, is being siphoned by these criminal syndicates and horrible conditions. So, and many of the victims of pig butchering scams, not only people who are having their money taken, but people who are being illegally trafficked and are being abused, are Chinese citizens forced into Myanmar. To what extent is the Chinese government concerned with the pig butchering scams and the scam centers in Myanmar? To what extent is the Chinese government serious about putting pressure either on the military in Myanmar or on the ethnic armed organizations to shut down these centers and to return the Chinese citizens who have been abducted and to stop the scams against Chinese citizens in China?
You know, for this scam, for the online scam industry, sometimes I a little bit disappointed on the Chinese government because they recognize them since the beginning. I mean, around 2011, 2010, you know, they recognize them, but they let them go. They let them begin grow, you know, because of the like they may think that this is the kind of a way to control and to maintain the stabilizing in the border Myanmar China border area, you know. But when many people more and more involved in this industry, and many people got scammed, and many people face the human trafficking to that industry, and also they receive many complaint from the people, they start thinking to control it. But but it's like a cancer, you know, it's like a cancer, but because their cells are already spread all over the world, not only Myanmar. What I want to mention is that all over the world, in Southeast Asia, now we can say like in Myanmar, in Laos, in Cambodia, something a little bit grow in Philippines and Thailand and something like that, you know. But in Myanmar case, like because of we are lack of rule of law in the current situation and lack of domestic stability in the domestic policy, so that that situation became the opportunity for those scam people, you know. They can try to grow their industry in the region. So what I hear from my sources and from the media is like China trying to crack down this industry, but they cannot fully crack down because of most of them are located inside Myanmar and the border, and also connecting with the many officials, you know, like not only the official from the government, but also from the official high rank people from the ethnic militant group. So, I mean, what I learned from my research is like sometimes the investor, they even don't know that their money is being invested in this kind of industry. You know, they were attracted, like they have by their business partner, like we have a very good we are starting a very good business. You may receive this percentage after 6 months or 1 year or something like that. You know, so people trying to, so that those people who doesn't know how to spend money and how to invest and how to do business, so they're trying to invest their money in this kind of scam business. You know, it's what happening in Myanmar and in Cambodia. What I could say is like, so that another thing is like, Myanmar military, they also noticed this kind of this industry since the beginning, since around 2010, 2011. And some but they are taking a tax by ignoring them in the border area. Not only the military now in this, if I have to say, a very academic way, not only the military but also the militant group, they are also taking tax from that second industry and ignoring them. You know, I mean, they may, okay, this is the one thing. Another thing is like, maybe they didn't think that they are doing a scam business. Maybe they think like they are doing the gambling and casino or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
So but when the industry is become very, very big and very booming, or when the crackdown like the 1027, like Chinese government give the green light to the local militant group to crack down this industry by using so that they can give the reason to the Myanmar government, like they are trying to crack down the scam industry. On the other hand, the militant group, they already have strategies to take back their so called territory, like this. But before China gave the green light, what I observed from their scenario, China gives the green light to the ethnic militant group. China trying to ask the military government, the current military government, to help them to give a green light to do some joint operation in the border area to crack down this kind of industry. Okay. What I hear from someone who is close with the high rank people in Naypyidaw, China even sent the list of the officer name that China wanted to arrest them for connecting with the second industry. It's some of them are including in the military government, and some local commander, local chief of commander, some close friend to the military government. Like what is happening like now is like the Bear family. Now they are arrested by now they were transferred by the military government to the China. Now they are charging with many record in the Chinese court in Yunnan State, Yunnan Province, as well as I remember. So, at the same time, you know, the military, I think they may feel like China is intervening the country's sovereignty, and they didn't want to transfer some people who is included in the Chinese list, and they trying to ignore some reguas. And so this situation didn't satisfy to the China, you know, so that the China gave that green light to the three Northern Alliance group.
Yeah.
To start the 1027 operation. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I think that's a very important point to make as well, that although China would not be committing troops personally to Myanmar, they would not be coming into Myanmar to do anything. The fact that the way that you phrase it is very important, that China gave the green light for the Three Brotherhood Alliance. And that a lot of the resistance organizations, particularly in the far north and the northeast of the country, operate ostensibly independently, but also still look to Beijing for permission to act and still operate within the limits that Beijing has sort of outlined for them, which is a very interesting factor. And I want to get back to that because I think that's something that we don't talk about often enough. It's just the final two questions that I have about interests that China has. And these might be a little bit more complicated because they're soft questions. The first one is ASEAN.
Yes.
Now, ASEAN is a sizable bloc. Taken together, the countries of ASEAN can't necessarily rival China, but they're at least on a comparable scale in terms of population and economic potential and landmass and resources. Is having indirect control over countries who are members of ASEAN and therefore having influence over the outcome of ASEAN decisions and ASEAN votes, is that something that China is interested in cultivating? Because it looks from the outside like China has a lot of influence over, for example, Laos, a lot of influence over Cambodia. It would have a lot of influence over the Myanmar military. Is China interested in having major influence over the decisions that are made within ASEAN?
For the ASEAN, like I'm afraid that we were deviation from our main topics, but if you have since you asked me, I'm trying to answer. Like, yeah, China trying to influence on the ASEAN, but because ASEAN also have some kind of weakness, you know, like. We are ASEAN are very based on the ASEAN, how can I say, like, ASEAN is different from the EU, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, another, because we are not, we cannot, ASEAN cannot intervene the member country domestic policy and something like that. And ASEAN cannot make a decision without having consensus from the all member states, and so this kind of thing is ASEAN weakness. Become the ASEAN weakness in the current situation, you know. So ASEAN know that. I mean, like in ASEAN, Philippines have many contradiction with China in the South China Sea, and Vietnam also have some problem with the China in the South China Sea, but. On the other hand, Myanmar, Laos, and Cambodia are very close to China. You know, they are kind of, they were listening whatever China say, something like that. But, but if you look but very, very closely, if I have to focus on the Myanmar issue again. China didn't recognize, and China even didn't give any strong comment, any support comment, or any rigid comment to Myanmar military after the military coup in 2021. Because China clearly knows that the current military leaders, they are not the fan of China. You know, they think China in a different way. they look China in a different way. And then China know that they are not fully trust on China. And at the same time, that's why China, as ASEAN approach to China, like to ASEAN approach to China to begin a mediator or something like that in Myanmar issues. But China refer to the ASEAN like, this is not, I cannot do this. It may be inappropriate if China do it. Myanmar is the member of ASEAN state, so you should do it. You know, China also transfer to the ASEAN. ASEAN should taking care of Myanmar. So that the ASEAN invite the General Myint Aung Hlaing, Senior General Myint Aung Hlaing, to the ASEAN headquarters and discuss and make the 5-point consensus. So that's what I want to say, connecting with the Myanmar and Myanmar, China and ASEAN, you know?
Fair. Yeah. And so just the final question on this block of Chinese interests in Myanmar, I'm wondering about the Chinese in Myanmar, because there is a very large population within Myanmar of ethnic Chinese people who continue to speak Chinese, who continue to identify themselves as Chinese. And we saw, for example, that when Jie Xin, Angel, was killed in 2021 in Mandalay, she was ethnic Chinese, as many people in Mandalay are. And this particular story circulated very widely within Chinese social media. And this prompted the military very famously to dig up her body and all these things. Is there, on the part of the CCP, is there an interest in protecting ethnic Chinese populations within Myanmar? Do they feel that they have some responsibility towards them? Do they feel that they have some right to act in the interests, or what is the relationship?
Okay. Thank you very much for this question. You know, it's just, I mean, I have a one friend from the northeastern part of Myanmar. She lived near the Lasho region.
And very Chinese region.
Very Chinese. Actually, she is also the Chinese descendant. And she told me, like, you know, I feel so sad, and I feel like we are kind of stateless person, because when we visit to the China never recognized them. China never recognized her and her family as a Chinese.
Wow.
But in Myanmar government also recognized them as a Burmese. You know, the Myanmar, they don't even have a first class national identity card.
Wow.
Yeah. So this is a real situation of Chinese descendant in Myanmar, you know. And I know some of my friend, I have many Burmese born Chinese friends. And some of their parents, they are still holding a second class national identity card.
Which I think for the audience, we have to clarify here, within Myanmar, citizenship is not as simple as it is in most Western countries. There are actually three levels of nationality. So I think you're referring to what we in English would call the associate citizenship.
Yes, kind of.
Yes. So a lower rank of citizenship, right?
Yeah. And some people, they are stay in the guest citizenships or something like that, you know?
Like this.
So what I would like to say is, like, but actually, you know, when for my research, I discussed with many Chinese, Burmese born Chinese people, and the majority of them, they wanted to recognize themselves as a Burmese born Chinese. Not they are not the Chinese people. They are not the Chinese citizen. They are Burmese citizen, but were born in Chinese family, something like that. You know, like what if I have to compare them? If I have to compare them with something, like, it's kind of Malaysian Chinese, Singaporean Chinese, and something like that. You know, that they always recognize themselves as like this, and they are not. As a very funny and very very interesting thing is they are also not a fan of Chinese people.
Mm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because they feel like because of this Chinese migrant who trying to migrate from the Yunnan to the Myanmar, and then trying to manipulate the local business and local markets in Mandalay and in Lashio state, Lashio region and the border area. Because of them, the local Chinese people, they think like they got some misunderstanding from the local Burmese people because of them. Mm. You know, actually, they are living here and now already three or four generations already. You know, so that they recognize themselves as a Myanmar citizen in the present time. You know, yeah.
And that's so it's fascinating how they view themselves. But the reason that I ask this question is because it strikes me as very similar to what mm-hmm. we saw in Ukraine, where in the east of the country, the ethnic Russian population, many of them were forcibly mm-hmm. moved into the territory of Ukraine in the 1940s and the 1950s. Mm-hmm. And so 2-3 generations, they've been mm-hmm. born in Ukraine. Many of them identify as Ukrainian citizens who are ethnic Russian. They speak Russian. But the mm-hmm. fact that they are ethnic Russian was used by the government of Russia as an excuse. And I do wonder whether the government of China feels that, regardless of the feelings and the opinions of the Chinese in Myanmar, does the government of China feel that they have some responsibility or some authority over these Chinese in Myanmar as well?
Yeah. I mean, I have never seen that many, whenever Chinese leaders visit Myanmar, they're trying to meet with Chinese businessmen and Chinese ethnic people, but it's not the majority people. I mean, they never met the real Chinese people who were born in Myanmar. You know, they mostly sat at a meeting with the Chinese businessmen and Chinese ethnic who has a good connection with the Chinese businessman. You know.
Mm.
So that what I could say, they may not interest in the current time,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not sure for the future. If Myanmar politics is changed, if Myanmar politics became dangerous for them, maybe they may think in a different way. You know, that's why when the military government announced that they support the Russia for invasion to Ukraine, I feel I'm so worried and I told some military people as much as I can, like, you cannot say like this, you know.
Yeah.
You should be ignored. You know, don't talk in anything. Just ignore it. If you say something, like now you are talking the very dangerous opinion to the war, you know, like you are supporting the Russia for invading the Ukraine. This is like you are also inviting China to invade your country.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, right? In the future,
absolutely.
In the future, if the geopolitics is changing, or if the Myanmar foreign policy is changing, or if the Myanmar relation with the Western or US is very developing, China may use the same reason, you know, to invade eastern part of Myanmar, not a northeastern part of Myanmar. Because China could say, like, those people are my people. They are all China. They speak Chinese. You know, it's so dangerous.
Yeah, that's dangerous. Yeah.
Yes.
Especially when we look at the north and the northeast, when we see places like Wa State, which has ethnic Wa people who speak the Wa language, and yet the leadership speak Chinese, the signs are in Chinese.
They don't even use the official language in the Wa State. They use Chinese Chinese language. Yeah.
So I mean, the case is so strong. It's scary.
Yeah, it's certainly so scary. But I still don't understand why the military leader talked like this.
Mm.
Very publicly, you know.
Yeah, it's so foolish. But so I just wanted to ask these questions because I wanted to get a picture of what are and what are not China's interests when it looks at Myanmar. So now that we've sort of looked at that and we've covered that and we understand why Myanmar is significant from the Chinese perspective, I want to take us back to the coup. I want to look at 2021 and the years since 2021. What was China's reaction to the coup? I know that you said that China did not publicly support or oppose the coup. They were quite quiet on this. Mm-hmm. But we also saw, and I wonder whether you can comment on this, because early in 2021, I saw a lot of posts, a lot of claims, some might say conspiracies, that China was sending support to the military in the form of non-lethal police equipment, riot shields, batons, things like this. But I also saw a lot of pictures saying that Chinese troops had been sent into Myanmar, which I think is provably false at this point. So what was going on behind the scenes? What was China doing? Do we have any idea? What was were they trying to influence Myanmar? Were they trying to talk to the military? What was their response?
Yes. Okay. First thing, I also would like to refuse that China sent the troops to Myanmar, and I didn't see any strong proof for this issue. And second one is like China support the deployment of Myanmar police. Is this for this project? Is not only for the Myanmar, but also for most of the country who are involved in the Belt and Road Initiative, you know, because China began to plot, and they wanted to contribute their knowledge and their way of controlling the domestic issue by using the police force in the regional country, you know, not only the Myanmar, but also as far as I know, but also from the some Latin American country and some countries from the Africa. So, I mean, maybe this is also the counter reaction of US, because at that time, USIP, as far as I remember, USIP trying to provide some training for the Myanmar police around in 2012, 2013, as far as I remember.
I mean, the Australian government also did.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. So maybe this is the counterbalancing of Chinese strategy, or maybe something like that. And what I could say is like, it's not only for the Myanmar, but for the things like why, at the time, 2021. Now we are talking about 2021, but so that we need to look back to the 2015 to 2020 during the NLD administration time. As I explained to you before, maybe as you remember, like I told you, China trying to use the parallel diplomacy, developing the relationship with not only with the government, but also with the people-to-people relationship, you know? So at the time, China accepts the role of Dong Aung San Suu Kyi.
Mm.
You know, her famous figure and her famous political standpoint, not only in Myanmar, but also in the Western world, you know. You see, this is very clear, even 2014, before the election, I think maybe I'm wrong for the date. China, CCP, the most powerful and the most strong communist party in the world, invite the democracy revolutionists to visit China.
Wow.
You know what I mean, right?
Yeah.
China even invite Dong Aung San Suu Kyi to visit China. before she even got government power.
Mm.
At that time, she was just the president of the committee of the parliament, you know. But CCP invite her as a chairman of the NLD, chairwoman of the NLD.
Mm.
So this is very interesting, you know. For me, this is very interesting because China, CCP is the world's strongest and biggest communist party in the world, you know. They invite Aung San Suu Kyi to visit Beijing and meet with the CCP General Secretary Xi Jinping and other party official and discuss about the relationship between two countries and something like that. It's like this is you know, China wanted to show the Myanmar people like we are okay with Aung San Suu Kyi, you know.
Yeah,
we pay respect to the Aung San Suu Kyi. It means we pay respect to the Myanmar people, needs and will, you know. No, we never forgot the Myanmar people, something like that. So they already start relationship like this, and they already start their path to develop. And when the Aung San Suu Kyi party won the election, China was the first country to congratulate them.
Yeah,
because they wanted to show the same way like we care about of Myanmar domestic political reform. And later, Aung San Suu Kyi also began understood that she cannot ignore the Chinese present, because China is just beside my country, just beside the Myanmar, you know. Other Western power and the US, they are so far from Myanmar, you know.
Yeah.
And so she began understood, and she began trying to develop the relations with the China. So, okay, if I have to contrast, like 2019, Xi Jinping even paid a state visit to Myanmar. And they they discussed many things, and they agree, and they sign many documents and agreement. And so, like, Beijing is already sure to the world and to the Myanmar people, like, we have a good connection with Aung San Suu Kyi. You know, we support the Aung San Suu Kyi policy, and we are happy to work with Aung San Suu Kyi for our future development and for our joint investment and joint infrastructure development. But suddenly, 2021, it suddenly happened, the coup in Myanmar. You know,
yeah.
I may need to confirm, but I hear from someone is like military didn't even inform that they are going to make the coup in Myanmar to China. They didn't even inform the Chinese embassy that they are going to do the coup in Myanmar. Like U Thaing Seng did, U Thaing Seng suspended the Mye Sung Dam project. You know, when U Thaing Seng suspended the Mye Sung Dam project, U Thaing Seng also didn't discuss with the China. So it's okay, like this. So you see, if I have to stand on the Chinese point of view, I can understand them. So they also disappointed with the Myanmar military because they didn't consult them to make the military coup. And second, if they support the military coup, it means they are destroying their effort to be to their effort to gain the people trust, Myanmar people trust, from the last 5 years, last 5 years. So if they know that Myanmar military is Another thing is like they know that Myanmar people are not, they were, Myanmar people are not, not to be, not to be very patient on the military coup, you know.
Mm.
Because they know that Myanmar people are already changed and already learn a lot of, already learn a lot of lessons from the democratization reform between 2011 and 2020.
Yeah.
And they already, they know that, another thing is like, they know that the different situation between Myanmar and China, you know, from 2011, 2020, Myanmar opened to many things and people began, people began more and more access to the information, not like people from China, you know, because in China, Chinese government control many social media and something like that. So
yeah.
I think that's why China didn't support and oppose in the beginning. And they even mentioned that this is the kind of government reshuffling. By the Chinese Ministry of Foreign Affairs spokesperson,
which so they interesting,
yeah. so they try to play like very carefully because they know that most of people know that I think Chinese leader also know this situation, like. The more military trying to press the Dong Aung San Suu Kyi, the image of Dong Aung San Suu Kyi more famous.
Yes.
You know what I mean, right?
Yeah.
So
of course.
So Chinese leader also know this point. You know, the more they trying to press her, the image of her more become more famous. So that if at the time, if they trying to support the military and communicate with the military, this is like, Chinese cannot trustful for Myanmar people. You know, they are always something like that. Maybe they will lose. So Chinese trying to maintain their voice, and as far as I remember, Chinese even didn't. Oppose when the UN decided to continue the candidacy of the current UN Myanmar ambassador to UN.
Yeah.
Ujong Motong. Yeah. Chinese didn't oppose it.
Yes.
This is very interesting point, you know, Chinese didn't oppose it. So like, but later, as I told you before, later Chinese after Chinese also got a disappointed situation with the Three Brotherhood Alliance in northern part, like Chinese gave the green light to them to destroy only the second industry, you know.
Yeah.
But they got so far, they even took down the one of the biggest military command in northern part.
It seems very difficult to understand China's position if they really have one, because they seem very neutral or both sides at once. They clearly are upset with the military because the military did not even warn them that there would be a coup, and this has caused a huge disruption. But they also don't seem to have complete confidence in the revolution to succeed. But at the same time, they are partnering with revolutionary organizations like the Three Brotherhood Alliance, but only to a limited extent. So what really is the strategy here?
Okay, in this point of view, I would like to say one thing. Like, in my point of view, I cannot fully accept that the Three Brotherhood Alliance operation is 100% connected with the current revolution in Myanmar. Because they also did for their interests, not for the revolution. That's what I believe, you know.
Can you explain that point?
Yeah. If they are really did for the revolution, and if they are really connected with the revolution, they may have a very strong collaborating and strong collaborating in command with the NUG government, you know, but they didn't have. Another thing is like Rakhine Army, IA Army, they are doing for their Rakhine state. Not connecting with the revolutionary fighting like PDF or something like that. You know, they support the PDF and they train the PDF. But what their strategy is, for me, really difficult to say for 100%. Is like their strategy is connecting with the supporting and connecting with the revolutionary project for the current situation. And MNDAA and TNLA also the same, because as I told you, like I told you my friend who is distrusting with Chinese stated, actually she live in the current fighting area between TNLA and the military, and after TNLA capture his her hometown, and they trying to change many things. They pressure to local people to speak Palau language, and they trying to make the advertisement and publication in the Palau language, not even in Shan language, you know, but they capture the Shan city, but the majority Shan city. So that's why I would like to say these things. But of course, their movement and their operation is somehow support the revolution, you know, because they make the military become weak, you know, and something like that. So for China. Now they wanted to control everything again, because China's feel that like maybe China feel that Myanmar will be collapsed in the northeast and northern part because of the revolution. Now they already captured the Sambit city. That's why China trying to intervene in that operation and trying to set up the peace talk between Myanmar military and the MNDAA, TNLA and AA. And China even now, less 2 months ago, China even trying to intervene by using the name of peace washing. I forgot the English name. It's kind of like they are watching that group is watching the peace project is good enough or not in last
year. Observers.
Something like yeah. that. They even opened the observer office in Lashio city.
Mm.
You know, before that. Myanmar military, the current Myanmar military leader, they don't want to see the Chinese involvement in Myanmar peace projects and national reconciliation projects, because they are not trust in China. But later they began understood that China, without having China's intervention, they cannot take back their control for the north and northeastern part, you know. Also, like General Miao Lin, he even praised the Chinese intervention when he visited the Pingwulin city, and he even told that we should appreciate the Chinese intervention and Chinese effort to support us to take back the Lashio city or something like that.
But so this is a very important question. Do you feel that Minhan Lai says this because he genuinely feels that China is helping him to take back control of the country? Or is he saying this because he feels that he has to give platitudes to China because he cannot afford to make China an enemy? Does he really believe that China is his friend, or is he just desperate to avoid making China angry?
I will say the second.
Yeah.
I will say the second one. As far as I know, he is not the fan of Chinese, mm-hmm. China, and he during his time as a regional commander in chief, and he involved in the fighting between Myanmar and MNDAA, Laogai crisis, and he never trusts on the Chinese military equipment, and he always intend to find a international and regional power to build the relationship to balance with the Chinese influence in Myanmar or something like that. But when he say like this, and when I saw this speech in the news, I also shocked, and I thought, but I believe that he became understood that the presence of Chinese influence in Myanmar, you know. He looked for Russia, but Russia is busy with the Ukraine.
Yeah.
And China is sitting just beside his door, you know, if I have to say like this, you know. So, and when the China gave the green light to the Three Brotherhood Alliance to start that 1027 operation, that time he desperately trying to develop the relationship with Russia, you know. So maybe he know that China's trying to show him like who is the real boss.
Yeah.
For Myanmar, you know. Yeah.
And just quickly, I want to sidetrack here a little bit, because I know, as you mentioned, you actually studied in Russia.
Yes.
And so I want to just get a little bit of perspective on the Myanmar-Russia relation, because we saw after the coup, of course, Minhan Lai went to the Russian military academy. They gave him, I think, an honorary doctorate. He's done multiple trips to China. Many of his, what's the politically best term here? Special monk friends have also made trips to Russia in this time. But obviously, as you say, Russia is very busy with Ukraine, and so they're not providing as much support as Myanmar would like. What really is the relationship? How does Myanmar view Russia now in terms of what Russia can actually give them? And how does Russia view Myanmar?
Okay. For this thing, like I have to say, like I have to say some background of Senior General Myanmar Lai. He used to work under the Vice Senior General Mao A in SPDC time, the previous military governments. He used to work in his Commander in Chief Army office under the supervising of Vice Senior General Mao A. I mentioned this because what I want to say is like Senior General Mao A is also Vice Senior General Mao A is retired. He is also used to be a commander of the Northeastern Command.
Mm-hmm.
And he is famous for anti-Chinese at that time. So you see, what I could say is like General Myanmar Lai also work as a commander of the Northeastern Command, and I think before the coup at the time, I forgot that year, but In 1 year, he visited the military show in Moscow, as far as I remember. Exhibition, military exhibition in Moscow, outskirts of Moscow. And in that exhibition, he intentionally talked, or maybe he didn't intentionally talk in front of the media. He described the Russian military equipment as the best one and more reliable one than the Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
So, for me at the time I was doing PhD in Moscow, and I saw that new, I feel so surprised, like, oh my God, Commander in Chief is described like this in front of the media. So how China will feel, you know?
Yeah.
And at that time, China also building a good relationship with NLE, especially with Aung San Suu Kyi. You know, so okay, maybe this is kind of politics at the time. I think like that, but after the coup, it became more clear of his intention. You know, because since the coup, he always trying to develop the relation with Russia desperately. You know, he visit Russia every year. In some years, he even visited twice or three times to Russia, and so. So I can say that how he really inspire on Russia. But another thing is like, it's also because of the, what I can feel, nah? This is not, I didn't do any deep research, but what I can feel from my experience in Moscow, I feel like, Myanmar military used to send many military students to study in Moscow. I could even say that Myanmar is in the third place in Russia for the country which sent the most students to study in Russia after China and Vietnam.
Yeah.
So you can see like another thing is like in the military, whenever they're trying to send the master student or PhD student, they have they cannot send without approving from the commander in chief. You know, the commander-in-chief approved them to study in Moscow. So he knows the situation and development of student in Moscow and something blah blah. And on the other hand, military also send the student to China, but mostly for the training. And something like that. And another thing is like General Mao Lai, or maybe the current military leader, they may think that they want to, like what the senior General Mao A think, like they depend on China too much, so that they need to develop the relationship with other Western country. So another thing is like they also think about the political privilege, and many people didn't mention it, but I would like to remind one thing is like, don't forget Russian also holding a veto power in UNSC.
Yes, and they use it a lot.
Yeah that's why they also desperately trying to develop the relationship with China, relationship with Russia. It's like they are striking two birds with the one stone. You know, they can also balance the power with China, and they can also use the Russian veto power in UNSC and something like that. So that's why. And another thing is like, if if we look back to the senior general Miao Lai visit to the other country, he also trying to visit Eastern Europe country around 2000, after the Myanmar democratization period. Yeah. So it means that he wanted to promote the image, and he also wanted to promote the relation to it with the other Western country, you know. So that, so he trying to build up the relationship with the US, Russia, and or now also with the Belarus and also other countries. But for the Russian side, if I have to say, if I have to answer your question, for the Russian side, as far as I feel, it's like Russia never think Myanmar as a strategic partner in the region. Until 2022 or 2023, Russia never think that Myanmar is a strategic partner in Asia Pacific region. It's not only because of the Myanmar situation, it's also because of the Russian foreign policy. In the Russian foreign policy, Southeast Asia and Asia Pacific region is not so important. You know, they focus on the East Asia and East Europe and the European region, because Russian always recognize themselves as a family of Europe.
Yes.
Those European people, they never recognize them as a Europe. But Russian people always recognize themselves as a Europe. So this is the things. But after the Ukraine invasion and after the military coup, they began close because of the ignorance from the Western war and sanction from the Western war, you know. So what I would like to say is like the situation, the current global situation pushed them become close.
Yeah. And that makes sense.
Pushed the Putin to recognize the presence of Myanmar in Southeast Asia or something like that, you know, because General Myon Lai always trying to meet with President Putin whenever he visit to the Russia, but he never had a chance. But he got the chance after the coup.
Interesting.
No, after the coup, even after the coup, President Putin is treating meeting him as like a government leader. Not a state leader. You know what I mean, right? This is a different stage, different protocols. So yeah, this is, by using the 1027, China show him like I'm here. Your real boss is just beside you. Don't forget it. You know. So is the situation is begun like this, but now Russian. What I could say very strongly, one thing is like Russian never trying to make influence like China to Myanmar in Southeast Asia, China is standing in Southeast Asia.
It's very interesting the way you're telling this. It's like major events, like we talk about 1027 as this turning point, this watershed moment of the conflict, and these major events are unfolding in Myanmar. And to hear you tell it, it's almost like Russia and China are flexing their muscles over a country that neither one of them really cares that much about, but they both want to be sort of seen as Minhan Lang's main partner. And the end result of that is well, who is going to sell weapons and helicopters and rockets? Who is going to support ethnic armed organizations? It's very strange to see it from this perspective, not as an organic part of the revolution, but as major international powers pulling their puppet strings within Myanmar to compete with each other for the military's attention.
That's why, you know, Sam, I also got some criticism from the Sam scholars.
Mm.
Yeah. For me, I mean, as I told you, in our previous discussion, yes, and I told you, like, I never seen China as a rival of my country. I always see them as a friend, as a neighbor, because, you know, I mean, like, let's think very simple. You know, you build after very good house with your 20 years efforts and with your 20 years savings, you build up the good house. But suddenly you got after you living in that new house, you suddenly notice that your neighbor is not good, or your neighbor is somehow strange. You know, your neighbor is somehow weird, you know, for you. But in this situation, are you going to destroy your house, or are you going to sell your house to move another place? It's very difficult, you know. Even the house, you know, it's very difficult because you put all of your savings in this new house and to build this house and to settle with your family, you know. This is only a small half if I have to compare with the country, you know. But so you see, for the country, we cannot move our country from the other place, you know, because of we don't like the China or something like that, you know. So we have to make our strategy, how to negotiate and how to make a good situation with China to survive in this region, you know. And others in and we can even see the China as a positive way. Like, if we can produce very good products in Myanmar, we can sell the China. You know, China has very big consumer market.
Absolutely.
And that's what I think, you know. So, but okay, let's see. You have, if I have to connect with my previous example, yeah, you are not happy with your neighbors, but you have a very good very good relationship with the other neighbors who live 10 houses, at least 10 houses at away from your house, you know. But that neighbor, of course, that neighbor may be very interested on his neighbor just beside his house. And how, even though he may listening out of my difficulties and my survival things in the daily life, but he may not help very quickly and he may not help very effectively, you know. Because he live far away from my house. Like this, for the Russia, you know, Russia is so far from my country, you know. Even though we wanted to promote the trade between China, between Russia and Myanmar, it's very difficult to, make the strategy for the logistic, you know.
Absolutely.
But for China, it's just beside. Some people they argue that China, Russian, also okay with the North Korea,
you
know, and they also have a good relationship with North Korea, like Russian and Myanmar now, and Russia begins so close with the North Korea or something like that. In my point of view, we cannot compare with the North Korea. Because North Korea is one of the neighboring country of Russia. Their border is connecting. Not like my country, you know.
Yeah.
So Russian can use North Korea in some strategic points, you know. And North Korea can also provide the soldiers to the Russia to participate in the Ukraine war, you know?
Yes.
But Myanmar military cannot provide this kind of things. Yeah, so the situation is very different to compare with the North Korea.
Mm. But so I find it interesting because you're talking about China and you said yourself that you never saw China as a rival. You saw China as a neighbor. You saw China as a potential partner. And you're completely correct when you talk about the size of the Chinese consumer market and the potential. Mm-hmm. And obviously, Myanmar's trade relationship with China is enormous. And it's a huge part of Myanmar's sector. But then, you know, we talk about the type of neighbor that China is right now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and that's still something that we're trying mm-hmm. to really figure out, because ultimately all my questions are driving towards the million-dollar question. What mm-hmm. is it that China is trying to accomplish in Myanmar? Because it was said by somebody that I was discussing with a while back that mm-hmm. Westerners like myself have a habit of looking at Chinese foreign policy and saying, well, China is not acting in her own best interest. China is making mistakes. And mm-hmm. the Chinese respond to this by saying, you know, we know our country and we know our interests and we know exactly what we're doing. So mm-hmm. is it in China's interest for the Myanmar military to take back control of the whole country? Or is it in China's interest for the revolution to succeed? Or is it in China's interest for the country to remain fractured and simply to influence individual ethnic organizations and regional powers to maintain control over territories that China deems strategically important? What is China's actual long-term goal in the post-coup Myanmar?
I may have a very different point of view.
Those are the best. I like those.
Yeah, from your point of, points of the questions, China is ready to communicate with someone who began a powerful in Myanmar. It doesn't mean it should be military or it should be NUG.
Okay.
You know, because their main interest is to maintain their presence in Myanmar and to maintain their investment and their infrastructure development in Myanmar.
Mm.
You know, what I could say is like it may be a little bit strong for some people for Myanmar and for China, but what I want to say is like China only interested in its interests. In its national interests, not for the Myanmar national interests. That's why, you know, China, as maybe you remember, like China or during China ignorance the military government, China had a talk or maybe two times or three times, maybe I'm wrong, China had a talk with NUG government.
Okay, I've heard that they had quiet, yeah, unofficial talks.
Yeah, they have an official talk. It means that China interested who is winning.
Okay,
in my point of view, they wanted to know who will be winning. But as I told you in the previous discussion, like, and on the other hand, NUG also forgot the presence of China. I mean, they didn't pay fully attention on the presence of China. You know, they are mainly focused on the US and the Western country. So that maybe China also feel like, do we really trust on NUG? Or maybe if NUG become in power, maybe they may reject all of our presence and all our investment in Myanmar. Maybe they may think that because, you know, even quasi government, I mean quasi military government, we look back to 2012 and 2030, the things in government.
Yeah,
that government even shut down the Missile Dam project without consulting with China. You know, that government is quasi-military government, and that government has the somehow good connection with China. And those people are who transfer from the previous military government, that government has very depend on China investment. But when they began a democratic reform process, they even shut down the Chinese important project in Myanmar without discussing with China. So maybe China may think like, if NUG became in power, they may even do more than this, you know, because of their national interest and because of their very closeness to the Western part.
You don't seem to be saying that China is opposed to the National Unity Government. You'd say that they're happy to work with them if they succeed, but China seems to be hesitant. They don't quite trust the NUG to be supportive of China's interests, and they don't quite trust the NUG to be capable of winning. Is that fair to say?
Maybe in the beginning, they may think that NUG is capable of winning in the revolution, but they may think they may have a doubt on the NUG foreign policy on Chinese investment and Chinese two-country relationship, you know, because they feel that NUG is so close to Western country.
Mm.
You know, maybe NUG may discuss, may talk about the human rights issues and democratization mm-hmm. issue with the Chinese official. You know,
mm-hmm.
what I hear from my friend from the Africa, you know, whenever they talk about, whenever they have a discussion with the Chinese government and official, they never talk about democratization and the human rights issue. They are always focusing on the business, you know.
Mm.
So, and then if they trying to talk about the human rights and democracy issue, Chinese doesn't want to listen. Because those things are the out of their interest.
But I know you've spoken about the culture of communication, the Chinese culture of communication.
Yes, yes.
And that
yes.
discrepancy causing problems. Is this part of that culture of communication?
Yes, yes. It's kind of, yes. I could say that. Yeah. So yes, now I think that's why China put their card on military now, because they think like, maybe they think like NUG is somehow weak. First, NUG doesn't have the fully command and fully control on all militant group in the current situation. And that one is very important. If NUG not winning, if military is losing, Myanmar will be collapsed.
Mm.
You know, if Myanmar will be collapsed in the pieces, is this that situation will make them very difficult to restart and control all of their investment and interest in Myanmar.
Yes.
So now they think that in the current present, the military is taking control. So even though military is losing the territory in the same places, at least there is a central command, you know, in military. So that that's why they decided to put their cut on the military. That's what I think, you know. And it also makes sense if I have to say in the business mindset, you know. This is another experience reflecting from my experience, like from my friend from China. They are mostly interest on their business, you know, not interest on the other business. They for to make successful for their business, they are ready to do anything. So in this mindset, China is ready to do anything to make sure their security for their investment and their project in Myanmar. So this like this. Now you see, maybe 6 months ago, 6 months or 4 months ago, the current military administration, they even announced the security law to allow the setup of private security companies and something like that. And after this law, I hear that I need to confront it. But I hear that China also bid up the security company and also send the private security force to the Zhaopiu DC port to protect the project.
So this is an important element, and I wanted to ask you about it because you agreed that obviously China did not send military personnel or anything like that in 2021 immediately following the coup, and that we don't have Chinese military personnel operating in Myanmar, that any of those claims were just myths and misinformation. But we have seen this claim of what some people in the media and the Western media have referred to as the Chinese Wagner Group, a private security company directly or indirectly controlled by the Chinese government. So I want to clarify this point. Is this actually true that Chinese-controlled private security or private military, we could say, personnel have been sent to Zhaopiu? And if it is true, does the military know about this and agree with this?
As far as I know, but I need to confirm it again. I told you, as I told you before, like they already sent the private security group to maintain the peace and prosperity in the Zhaopiu DC port project. After the military announced the law on private security companies and something like that. So that maybe they set up a private security company, like joint venture private security company, and they send their troops to the Zhaopiu DC port like this. Yeah, maybe under this situation, I think.
Okay, so this would be done with most likely with the knowledge and the collaboration of the Myanmar military. This would not be something that China just does completely independently. Anything, so they would not be that bold.
Yeah, maybe I could say that China, the military government made the law because of the Chinese request, or maybe something like that.
I see.
Because maybe in the future, Russian may also send that kind of company to product their project in the Dewe industrial zone. Because now China, there is an MOU between Myanmar and Russian government to Russian government involvement in Dewe industrial zone. So this is another. And one thing is, like, I would like to mention is according to your questions, like in China, every private sector has an officer from the CCP and the government. As far as I remember, like. And another thing is, like, most of the big public security companies and the military company and the electricity and semiconductor or something, like most of the corporation, they have joint venture with the Chinese government in China.
So yeah, they have to.
I could say that, yeah, they may have some influence from Chinese government or maybe CCP. Yeah.
And so okay, so this is a fascinating development, and it's something that I think on the surface of it looks very shocking, because it sounds very close to saying, well, the Chinese are putting troops into Myanmar. But because this is Zhaopiu, it would be fair to say that these personnel are only going to be there to protect a very economically and strategically significant Chinese investment, and are not going to be used to fight against revolutionary forces, and would certainly not be used to fight against Tamador forces. Like they would purely be there to protect Chinese economic interest. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Cool. I just wanted to jump back a little bit because I thought we've discussed it previously in another discussion we had, and I thought it was a very fascinating point, and I wonder if we can delve a little bit deeper into it. The culture of communication, because I know that you've commented that some of the difficulty between the NUG and the Chinese side has been that the two sides are communicating in different ways, and this is not necessarily to the advantage of the NUG. And I find it contrasts very interestingly with what you said about the Chinese side being predominantly pragmatic and interested in doing whatever they need to do to achieve their goals. To what extent is there a hesitancy by the Chinese to work with the NUG, to recognize the NUG, to assist the NUG, not based on strategic concerns and pragmatic concerns, but based on the fact that the NUG is talking to China in a way that the Chinese do not appreciate and do not agree with?
In my point of view, it's already a little bit late for NUG to talk with the Beijing, because nowadays NUG or even NUG also having many criticism from the people, and now many people, even the same member of the NUG and some people who are famous for the revolution, they are criticizing on the NUG to make reform. And on the other hand, military took control back from in some areas in north and northeastern part of Myanmar. And at the same time, for the politically, military is pushing to make sure themselves to hold a general election at the end of this year. And military promising not only to the China, but also to the international community that they are going to have a general election at the end of this year. So for those reasons, that's why I give you that NUG has already a little bit late to approach China. Because China is thinking like, it's already the middle of 2025. If China has to wait the another development of Myanmar, they need to wait only 6 months. Because military is promising to them there will be a general election at the end of this year. And on the other hand, India also support the general election.
Of course, yeah.
And on the other hand, very surprisingly, the current chairman of the ASEAN, they are not officially and strongly support, but they also somehow accept to have a general election at the end of this year.
Yeah. So China will not do anything new, will not try to change anything until the election happens.
Yes. So you see, in the business way, not because I wanted to say Chinese people are really focused on the business. In the business way, now you see that he's going to make something, you know, and within the six months. But the other guy who is trying to approach him to sell something is like to sell their products, but their product is having a complaint and criticism from the consumer during this time, and also their sponsor is also doesn't have fully interest on their products. Like what I want to say is like the US now, you know, the changing of US foreign policy and domestic policy is somehow making NUG become weak.
Yes.
So okay, if I have to stand on the Chinese point, I may think that, okay, I think I should wait for 6 months. to see what happened after the 6 months.
They've been waiting 4.5 years. They can wait 6 months. Yeah.
Maybe Chinese people, they like, we already wait for the 5 years. Now you see, another thing is like Chinese patiently wait for military movement or for the current military government policy deployment for 2 years, 2.5 years. If I have to count correctly, 2.5 years. Because as I mentioned, they didn't say anything since the beginning of the coup. It means 2021. They wait at least 2.5 years, nearly 2.5 years since the beginning of military coup to send their foreign minister to Naypyidaw.
Mm.
You know what I mean, right? They already wait for 2.5 years what is happening in Myanmar. So now they need to wait only for 6 months or nearly 1 year. Why not?
I mean, that makes sense from their perspective. But what I do wonder about, because we've been talking about China all this time, and talking about China as a monolithic entity. Now, in the case of something like Russia, or in the case of even the United States or Myanmar, it's very difficult to say this is what the country wants, because there are so many different factions within the government, within industry, within the country, who want different things, who are in conflict. I'm wondering, when we talk about Chinese interest, when we talk about Chinese strategic objectives, when we talk about these things, how unified is China? Is everything going to go according to what the CCP says is in the best interest of China? Are all of the different elements of the government going to work on that? Are all the different industries going to work on that? I know you said the private companies, or quote-unquote private companies, still have CCP representatives who have to work there. Is China really unified? Or are there still internal divisions within China that would still be arguing over what the best strategy is in Myanmar? Would there be, I don't know, certain groups in China who maybe have developed their own relationships with ethnic organizations and regional powers within Myanmar to try and corner the market on certain resources? How unified or how disjointed is China really when it comes to Myanmar?
If the rumor is correct, the current rumor of the Chinese Chinese domestic political shifting is correct, I could say that China may have only little interest on Myanmar.
Yes.
You know, because they may focus on their domestic political development first. Because China wanted to show they are unite all the time to the war. And they doesn't want to show their internal conflict, especially for the political conflict to the war. So maybe they may focus on their domestic issue first, and they may not put fully interest on Myanmar. But they may not fully ignorance on Myanmar too. You know.
Yeah.
And another thing is like CCP already have a strong instruction to communicate with Myanmar and Southeast Asian countries. So even though there will be a different leader in Chinese in the future China, they may follow the same strategies on Myanmar issues and Myanmar. Whenever they have a talk with Myanmar leaders, that's what I believe.
Would it happen that, for example, a group in Yunnan, whether this is a corporate group, whether this is local Yunnan government, whether this is a criminal organization in Yunnan or whatever, might independently say, I can make money or I can gain power by going into Myanmar myself, building a relationship with one of the ethnic organizations, paying them to allow me to extract their resources, and doing this independently of the permission from Beijing? Could something like this happen? Would there be groups who might try to engage with Myanmar in ways that are different than how Beijing wants to engage with Myanmar? Or is that impossible in China? Is everyone going to ask Beijing for permission before they do anything?
It depends on the how many representative have, how many union representative participate in the Chinese government and Chinese administration, you know? And okay. another thing is like, what I could say is like, it could happen. And it used to happen, what I want to say. It used to happen for the Japan and for the Japan industry, for the online gambling and online scam industry. It happened like this, you know. And another thing is like, what I want to say is like, most of the Chinese investment and Chinese project in Myanmar is the majority of the project and investment to support the deployment of Yunnan province, not for the whole Chinese country, you know, not directly for the Beijing, not directly for the other province, especially for the Yunnan province. Sometimes I've like now Yunnan, if Yunnan has a access to the sea, it means that China has access to the sea.
Yes.
So they are playing like this. So that sometimes I even doubt on the Chinese policy. Like that's why doubt on the Chinese policy, like on Myanmar, the relationship between Myanmar and China. That's why I talk to you on the previous discussion. Like sometimes China need to recognize Myanmar as a sovereign state, not as a province of China.
How is it the best way to interact with China? Because, you know, I as a Westerner, I think many of us in the West view China negatively. We view China as a rival. And within the Asian sphere, most people seem to say we view China more as a partner, strategic partner, economic partner, development partner, but we also have to be very careful because we don't want to be turned into a Chinese province. We don't want to be turned into a Chinese vassal. So moving forward, what is the best way to navigate that? If, let's say, hopefully the revolution wins, it seems that you're saying that if the NUG starts winning, gaining more territory, the Chinese government will start talking to the NUG more. If that happens, what is the best way to proceed to gain China's confidence and to gain China's support without becoming completely dependent on China and without becoming subordinate to Chinese interests?
For your question, I really thank you for this question. And it's a very good question. I also wanted to, because I also wanted to say something to NUG.
Mm-hmm.
When you ask me this question, I have a chance to say what I want to say to the NUG, you know?
Yeah.
NUG should reflect the current situation, you know? Like they cannot truly trust on the US and US foreign policy. Now, because of the Trump administration, you know, NUG also losing somehow confident in this revolution, and it also affect to the participant to the revolution. And another thing is like, I want to mention very carefully is like, I'm support the democracy system. I like the election government, and I believe on the election process and something like that. But the difference between US and the China is like, you in the US, the government is changing in every 4 years. You know, another thing is like, if they got they won again, it lasts for 8 years. But in China, one generation of leadership should be in the office for 10 years. And now in the Xi Jinping time, he even extended his time in the office for another 10 years, maybe for his life. But that's what I want to say is like, so the policy, the situation of stability in policy is different between China and the US, you know. The current situation is very clear. If I have to say, the current situation is very clear. Like, US is changing rapidly within the 100 days of the Trump administration. They destroyed the USAID, other organization, and also the two strong US media, IFA and VOA. It's very effect on the Myanmar revolution for the NUG. So they should reflect on this experience, and also experience from the senior general Mao Lai, when he trying to approach the Russia very closely, and when he trying to make a bail of the ties with Russian very strongly, very actively. China show him who is the real bot by supporting the 1027 operation, you know. So what I want to say to the NUG is NUG should be clever whenever they trying to talk with the regional and global powers, you know, who is always be our friend, and at the same time who is not always be our rival too, you know. And we should think about China as a regional partner, and we should think about China as a big consumer market for the Myanmar industry. But at the same time, we should make sure that China treat Myanmar as a sovereign state, not as a province, you know. We should play very clearly between the global power and the China, and even between the India and China for Myanmar, you know. We are sitting between the two big countries in the region. And India also have some potential for us, and China also have some potential for us. So we should take this opportunity to make develop in Myanmar infrastructure development. And for the politically, you know, another funny thing that I see as an academic, another funny thing for Myanmar foreign policy is every government, any kind of government in Myanmar, no matter their exile government, an in power government, NLD government, quasi military government, and the military government, they always announce to the world as they are practicing the independent, active foreign policy. But they always approaching to the side. You know, now the military government, they also pronounce that they will continue practicing the independent active foreign policy, but they trying to approach the Russia, you know, and they trying to approach the one side. And NUG also like this. NUG also announced that they were to continue the foreign active and independent foreign policy, but they are so trying to be so close to the West and US.
Mm. And that concerns China.
Yeah, that may concern China. Mm. You know? So how can we play between these things, you know? Like, of course, another thing is, you know, very interesting thing. This is very interesting thing that I would like to say you in the as my final part. this is also common mindset between NUG and military. And also in the majority of Myanmar people. We should wake up from our golden era. We are always thinking like Myanmar is the best. Myanmar is the strongest kingdom in the region. And Burmese people are the good. And we are something like that, you know. Diversity is unity. We should think like that. And another thing is like, we should somehow reduce our very nationalist mindset and our Burmanization mindset. You know, another thing is like we should accept on our pragmatic and real situation of Myanmar. You know, like for me, one thing what I want to like say, maybe some listener now, they may be very angry with me. What I'm going to say to you is like, I support the high speed railway project from Yunnan to Myanmar, Yunnan to Chaozhou, because this is kind of infrastructure project, you know, infrastructure development project. Of course, we have to be very careful in negotiation with the China, you know, by taking the example from Laos and Cambodia or something like that. And China didn't stop that railway project only from Yunnan to Chaozhou. Actually, that project is like they also made another division from Mandalay to Yangon and Yangon to Dawei to Bangkok and Bangkok to Ante the Singapore, and like this. And at the same time, also Yunnan to Vientiane, Vientiane to Bangkok, Bangkok to Singapore. They have a master plan like this. But in my country, in Myanmar, some nationalist people and some people, they are thinking like, this is dividing the Myanmar, you know. Actually, we need this kind of infrastructure development, you know. But in the fair negotiation, not in the one-sided dominated negotiation, you know. So yeah, we should think about our policy and our mindset on China, and we should also reduce our anti-Chinese mindset. And whenever we talk about the project and infrastructure and politics with China, we should set aside our anti-government and anti-Chinese mindset, and we should be a pragmatic and realistic, and we should be strong on our national interests. And also we should strongly remind to China, should strongly remind to China, especially the Chinese leader, as Myanmar is a sovereign state, independent sovereign state, not the province of China, you know, something like that.
And I fully agree with your points. And I know.
Thank you very much. It's like a funny thing, you know, because many people, they think like they cannot accept my point of view. And some people, they even accuse me like, oh, he may discuss like this. He may think like that because he's daddy in Moscow or something like that, you know. Yeah.
No, I certainly don't see that. I can understand that there would be nationalists who have a very hardline position, but I think, you know, we have to accept facts, and we have to see that Chinese investment in a lot of countries, particularly in Southeast Asia, has been critical. Laos, I know for a while was experiencing incredible, I think 8% year on year, 8% GDP growth as a result of Chinese investment and Chinese infrastructure projects. So the benefit to partnership with China is undeniable. It is exactly as you say, though, needing to engage with China in a responsible way that makes it very clear that you continue to be an independent sovereign state. And although you are a partner and you are a friend, you are still your own country and you still have the right to make your own decisions. And that is the careful line to weave.
I would like to say it again, like, please don't forget we are just beside the China. China is just sitting beside our door. And another thing is like, China has very many potential for development of Myanmar. And we shouldn't see China as a bad guy all the time. We may use them for our country development in some parts and in some industry. And another thing is like, whoever take control power in Myanmar, they cannot forget the presence of China. And whenever we made our people make Chinese angry, or the government made Chinese angry, we will be in trouble. But for the people, we can show our solidarity, and we can show our dignity, and we can show our sovereignty. We can show our state as a sovereign independent state to China. We can stand on that point, and we can negotiate free and fair whenever we discuss with China. And we should also appreciate our long and prospect history of relationship between two countries since the historical era. So what I would like to say is like, I'm ready to I will be very happy if someone have a counter argument or point of view to discuss on my discussion. I will be very happy to accept it, and I will be very happy to answer it. I will be very appreciate for those listeners who pay the most attention on this podcast. Thank you very much.
Before we sign off, I want to take this opportunity to sincerely thank those of you who have chosen to contribute to our wider Better Burma nonprofit mission. In addition to supporting our humanitarian work, we simply could not continue to provide you with the content and information through our podcast channel without the wonderful support of generous donors, listeners, and friends like you. Each episode provides access to one more voice, one more perspective, one more insight. Every donation of any size is so greatly appreciated and helps us to continue the mission. So we take this time to say thank you. To find out how you can contribute, visit insightmyanmar.org/donation. Yarananda daya nanga ya 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 da